Happy Bitcoin Tuesday, freaks. It's your host, Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch, the show focused on actionable discussion about Bitcoin and freedom tech. I know y'all have been waiting a long time for a new dispatch. It's been a minute. I've been traveling all over the place. I'd like you guys to get a little bit used to me hitting you with like five dispatches in a week and then going on like a two-week break and then doing it again. You can listen at your leisure rather than me choosing when to post. I don't like sitting on content, just like putting it out there. And this week is no different. We have an amazing group of developers and other Bitcoiners at Bitcoin Park in Nashville. So I have a whirlwind week planned for you all. We're starting off with this episode, but then also tomorrow I will be talking to the LDK team. I have Steve Lee from Spiral scheduled on Friday as well. So that's at least three dispatch. Other than I have Casey with Ordinals and Inscriptions for the weekend. That's either going to be Saturday or Sunday. And there might be a few more sprinkled in there. If I can just drag people into the studio, I'm going to do it. So the easiest way to keep track of when I am going live with a new dispatch is either on Twitter or our Matrix chats. Or if you subscribe on YouTube or Twitch, you will get notified when we go live. That makes it very easy. Citadel Dispatch, you know the deal, freaks. It is completely audience funded. We have no ads, no sponsors. You guys are who fund the show. You guys are who make it special. You guys are who join our live chat and participate. I think we're the only show in Bitcoin. I know we're the only show in Bitcoin with an interactive live chat. So I like to think you're all the host alongside me. The easiest way to support Dispatch is through podcasting 2.0 apps like Fountain and Breeze Wallet, Echo LN. Simply download the app, search Citadel Dispatch, press that subscribe button just like a regular podcast app. But then you can also choose how many sats per minute you think the show is worth. Those sats flow directly to my node. It's really empowering and cool to see you all support the show that way. You can also support it via my BTC Pay server. I guess now I have it linked to geyser.fund, but it's basically a BTC Pay front end. All those links are at CitadelDispatch.com. Every link you need is at CitadelDispatch.com. I'm going to keep it kind of short because I think you guys know the deal. But before we get started, and also I know it's a bear market. I know it's a recession. If you don't have sats to spare, sharing Dispatch with your friends and family, subscribing on your favorite platform, literally on every platform, any podcasting app, YouTube, Twitch, Bitcoin TV, Rumble, Twitter, sharing it, subscribing it, leaving reviews, it all helps and it's all appreciated. So thank you, freaks, for that. But before we get started, I'm going to read the top four boostergrams from our last dispatch. Boostergrams are another thing in podcasting 2.0 where you pick how many sats you think it's worth and you attach a message to it. It's basically you can think of it like a global comment section. It's pretty cool because anyone can see them. We have at Patar contributed 500,000 sats. Wow, I didn't even see that until now. That might be our largest single contribution. So thank you, Patar. He goes, I want to thank you, Matt, for the tough but important interview you did with Peter. I like Peter, and everyone deserves a second chance, but we need to take responsibility for our actions. We have at Rob1Ham, who was a guest on this episode, that says Miniscript fixes this. Might be the first time a guest has contributed sats to the show of the same episode he was on. We have at Eric99, ride or die freak, constant support of the show, saying stay humble, stack sats. Thank you, Eric. Great advice. And then we have user 640-4948-553-139-384, who decided not to create a username. He sent 11,000 sats and said, courtesy of Random Noster Anons. Thank you to all the freaks who support the show. I really do appreciate it. It's special. It's special what we're building here at Dispatch. Anyway, that's enough of me. We have a great show lined up. The topic of the day is Bitcoin Dev Kit. I have some great contributors here to the Bitcoin Dev Kit project. We have Steve Myers here. Steve, how's it going?
Great. Great. Excited to be here. First, a longtime listener, first time speaker.
Awesome. Well, excited to... pleasure to have you. Steve is actually the only one here that is also Nashville based. He runs our local BitDevs. We're going to have BitDevs tonight. So if you're in the Nashville area or within like a 5-hour drive, yep, consider
5:30. Come on by the park.
Yeah, get in the car right now.
Coffee, whatever you need.
Yeah, get in the car right now. You can listen on the road.
Yes.
And then come join BitDevs. We have Daniela in the house. How's it going, Daniela?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure's all mine. We have Thunder Biscuit. How's it going, Thunder Biscuit?
Doing well. Thank you.
Great name choice.
Cheers.
How'd you come up with Thunder Biscuit?
Thunder for us was an old word with my brothers, so it was a word I really liked. And so I knew I needed thunder in there, but it's too small of a handle, so you can't use it anywhere like, you know, GitHub or Twitter or anything. So I needed some sort of extra qualifier.
Oh, that's interesting. So, and were you just eating a biscuit at the time and you just threw it on there?
I love biscuits. Biscuit eater. That's how I went. That's what I recommend to people. If you're looking for a name, grab two words you like, one after the other, just some sort of...
Yeah. I love it. And we have Alikos. How's it going, Alikos?
Great. Yeah, really excited to be finally at a technical podcast because I'm always at, you know, non-technical interviews. I always have to keep it simple. I'm happy to be here. I can...
We'll go deep here.
Yeah,
we'll go deep.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Like that's my thing.
Yeah, continue the deep on this simple dispatch.
So Bitcoin Dev Kit, a simple explanation that I like when I talk about Bitcoin Dev Kit is this idea of essentially a building block for other wallets. Try and get like all the hard parts out of the way so people can just focus on building interesting experiences without all the hard, difficult security. Right. Concerns.
Yep. I mean, it's a library, so it's used by other software to make their software. It's built on other libraries, so it's built on Rust Bitcoin and Rust Miniscript, two well-respected projects. But those two projects don't give everybody what they need. This project started with Alikos. He can maybe talk a little about more original inspiration for it. But
the history.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, historically, the project started when I was at Blockstream. So I was working on the green apps, on the green team.
Green wallet, right?
Green wallet, yeah. And the thing was, the question was, how would we create green today? Like, green is a pretty old project, so there's a lot of legacy stuff in there, obviously. And the thing was, if we had to recreate it today, what would we use? So we started thinking about descriptors and generalized scripts, because, you know, green is just a 2 of 2. What if you want to have a 2 of 3 with this? It is also 2 of 3, but that's kind of a smaller thing. Anyway, yeah, the inspiration was we need something that's super generalized, that if you want to make a wallet such as green or something a bit more complex than just a single sig, you take this library and does everything for you. So that was kind of the original inspiration. That was it.
And I found the project because I was working on an Android app sort of quietly on my own evenings and weekends. And I was using the Bitcoin J library and it wasn't doing what I wanted. And I learned about Rust and the Rust Bitcoin stuff. And I thought, we need an Android version of this. We need something that's easier to use for that kind of stuff. And I started doing it on my own. And then I ran into Magical Bitcoin, which was originally the name for BDK. And I'm like, oh, this is,
I remember that.
This is way better. This is awesome stuff. So I joined up and I've primarily been focusing on the mobile bindings, but also just generally, you know, becoming a Rust developer. That's kind of one of the amazing things about open source is anybody can join if you have anything to contribute. And then you just end up learning a ton. So I went from zero to a little better than zero, you know, with mentoring from Alikos and the other more experienced Rust developers. And, you know, was able to get like way more than I ever thought. Like I all the features that were in BDK, some of them I like Miniscript, for instance, which is part of the descriptor stuff. I had no idea like all the things you could do with it until, you know, we started playing with the library and just how easy it would be. Like this, you know, like I would have been happy with the 2 of 3 and, you know, and maybe, you know, seed words and stuff like that. But
right.
BDK does way more than that.
Yeah. I should also say you've also been doing all the stuff that I don't want to do.
Yes.
So you deserve a lot of credit for that.
Thank you.
I'm a technical
guy. That's been my focus is like, I figure, well, you know, if I can't do all the technical stuff that Alikos can do, I can at least do all the non-technical stuff. You know, like I can do technical stuff. I
mean, I'm super important as well. Like community
just,
and,
you know, try to pick up and talk to people. Like I can be, I like to think of myself as level 1 support, you know, like I'll field as much as I can. And then if I get it wrong, I'll get level 2 or 3 support online, get the real hard stuff done. But fortunately, most of our questions are level one support. So,
before we continue, let's talk about roles. Like, how are the roles laid out here in this project?
It's somewhat fluid, but I think, you know, Alokos is the original architect and built most of the original software. There was other folks on the team early on too, some more of the Italian crew.
Yeah. So, yeah, we kind of rotated a little bit. So we are the only two, I think, that stuck together for a long time.
Yeah.
There were some people joined for a little bit and then left. Some people got a grant for a year and then left, went back to their previous job. But yeah, we don't really have like well-defined roles. It's kind of a...
Yeah, which is pretty common in open source projects, right?
It is, yeah.
Take turns on releasing. Like that was sort of one of the things we were doing, is taking turn on releasing. And then everybody on the team's been sort of doing technical support. I know Laurent's been really focused on mobile bindings, Android stuff. That's I think your original entree, right?
Did you just leak Amazon integration?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Breaking. No. Yeah, Android stuff. Yeah. Maybe tell it. Like, yeah. So like Android, and then when Daniela joined us.
Was that like HCPP, the most recent? You joined recently or?
She's been involved, but yeah, like, full time recently.
Exactly. Because at first, I contributed with the coin selection. So basically,
you know,
that
just
was
a minor thing, a little minor topic, like coin selection. But, you know, it was coin selection.
And that was like my first Rust project I did, basically. And it's been an interesting experience because I wrote the branch and bound coin selection, copying it from Bitcoin Core.
Right.
And if you know Rust, you know it's not like the easiest programming language, and the BNB coin selection is all about recursion and things like that. So I remember it being interesting, but really hard. So yeah, I contributed with the coin selection, but then because in that period I didn't really have a job, so it was just like I have a lot of free time, right? But then I found myself a job, and so I just stopped contributing for a while, and then I joined again full time with a grant. At this point, it was 6 months. Yeah, 6 months ago, and yeah, I've been working mainly on the Rust. Like the Rust library. The Rust side of things.
Fixing bugs, adding features.
Yes, yes.
Answering questions, making examples. That's another big thing, especially to a project like this that's been around a few years. A lot of it is just creating examples that people can follow that want to build a new wallet, just to help them get started. That's, you know, and documentation. The code is well documented. You know, there's a lot of inline code, but sometimes people just need more of a cookbook recipe. Thunderbiscuit has done a lot on the Android mobile side for that too, with going even beyond examples, but with like full wallets in Android. You want to talk a little about how you got into that?
Yeah, that's right. So my expertise is mostly Android and JVM and Kotlin and Java. And so I think I got into BDK from a different perspective, as you know, from the different Rust engineers. I wanted to build mobile wallets, and BDK, I knew they wanted to look at language bindings and how we were going to maybe bring that to mobile. And so that's how we ended up. And now with Steve, I maintain our language bindings for Android and Swift, as well as Python, so devs can use it. And that's really one of the big parts of, I think, the Bitcoin Dev Kit, like the power of it. Is you're coming from Rust, and if you're familiar with these things, Rust has the pedigree. If you know, like, you know, it's kind of like the horse with all of the fathers and the grandfathers, and you know, like the high, the pure breed of Bitcoin and of Miniscript is Rust. This is where it's happening. And so, if you're an Android developer or a Swift developer, you don't have access to that. There's no like Miniscript on iOS. So you're going to need to either use a library that is less well-tested or less well-known and whatnot, or if you can
write it yourself.
And like, are you going to trust yourself? Are your user going to trust
yourself?
Whereas if you say, well, we're going to pull from the Rust ecosystem, which is the most reviewed, well-tested, I mean, it's unbelievably powerful. This is what you want to do. This is what we're bringing basically to Android and to iOS.
So they're writing in their native language, but they're able to interact with.
That's right. It's completely transparent. So I have, for example, a wallet in production myself as a side project, but I also have a sample app and that you can just build, you know, press play and it builds the app and you get
cool
anything you want. And that includes things you would never get. It would take you years, you know, like Taproot stuff.
Right.
Like, what? Are you getting Taproot? Yeah, you do. Just because it's coming from the Rust. So it's unbelievably powerful to create these bindings. And from developers who are coming from these languages, it's transparent to them. There's no sense that you're using Rust at all. So the language...
It's very intuitive.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm just coming in.
I just want to mention super quickly, because you've listed the bindings we have. We also have React Native, right? But it's kind of a separate project. So there's another person working on it.
Yeah. He's also got a grant from Spiral who's doing the React Native.
So yeah, it's like Swift, JVM.
And people love React Native because it's easy to do cross-platform.
Yeah, that's right.
And Flutter now.
So. Oh, Flutter as well. Yeah.
Actually, Flutter is becoming, originally React Native everybody was excited about because it was cross-platform. But now there's Flutter and it's sort of, it's now taking the spotlight. Everyone's like, oh, well, if you got Flutter, I'm going to do Flutter. And
it's because it's way more performant, right? Is that basically
it's just a little better language. If you're doing React Native, it's sort of JavaScript, which is not, it's not quite as great a language to write in, unless you love it.
Am I correct that the trade-off with React Native is that it's very easy to do cross-platform between Android and iOS, but you just never get the same kind of performance as you would if it was native to either?
I don't think it's performance per se.
I think that's a big part. Like, it's not really performant. And
I think it's a good mental model,
yeah.
The other thing that happens is that you write something in React Native, it isn't as performant. So what you end up doing is writing in the native languages itself. So you can write React Native, it gives you like a basic thing.
Right.
And if you want, you can dig in and write Kotlin or write Swift inside to get that extra performance. And so what ends up happening is that a lot of like professional production applications that are written in React Native actually hire Kotlin and Swift devs themselves to actually write the app.
That's interesting.
So you write React Native for your test thing, but if you want a real, you end up with devs that do.
I think also for the UI, like I think maybe, I don't know, I'm not super familiar with mobile libraries, but I think React Native apps, they kind of tend to feel more cheap in a way, like they're not native. So if you build something with a native Kotlin APIs or the native Swift UI, whatever, I think the app feels a lot better, feels more native, more premium.
Trade-offs.
The big companies.
It's more
companies,
because it's really using all the best feet. It's like doing it in the best way for each platform.
Yeah.
It's weird, right? Because I'm curious what you guys think. I mean, my mental model is that the overwhelming majority of Bitcoiners will only interact with Bitcoin on mobile.
Yeah.
That hasn't been really the case up until now. But if you think about like the next billion people that enter Bitcoin, they might never use it on a desktop or laptop computer. They're going to probably use it on mobile.
Yeah.
But then in America, most of the Bitcoiners I talk to, I just feel like there's a huge iOS market share. But then if you talk about like the global South, you talk about like Africa or Latin America, it's like 90% Android, and it's like lower end, older Android phones too.
Yeah, there are geographical differences, like pretty big geographical differences where, like for me as a European person, I would not say iOS is that important, because you look around and I think maybe nowadays not so much, but I think you tend to see a lot of Android devices.
Really?
Here in the US, it's all iOS.
Everyone has iPhones here.
Yeah.
It's a lot of Android here too, but yeah, definitely.
I mean, I say this as an Android person, but a lot of people.
Right? More like technical people use Android, I guess. Yeah,
that's
like average
people
users.
People don't want to sideload stuff.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
I mean, I've still been waiting for the app stores to just cut all Bitcoin wallets.
It's happened before
on iOS, right?
Yeah, Apple used to not allow it back in the day.
Exactly. That's why I develop on Android.
That's why you started, right?
Apple and I have... fundamental differences in philosophy. I just can't. F-Droid, the idea that I can literally give you a file on your USB key and you can load it up on your phone. It's an app.
It's
it
awesome.
Works
yeah.
on Android. Yeah. Apple has to go through the gateway. They have to vet.
And you have to set up an account. You have to I don't even know. I don't have an iPhone, but I think you might have to put a credit card in even for free apps or something like that. Or
you have to an account. Like you have to register yourself.
Oh, that's what happened with the Mutiny guys. I think I might have them on Dispatch too, just to add another Dispatch to your Plate Freaks. They decided to do a progressive web app because Tony, one of the maintainers for Mutiny, he got denied on the App Store. There was a bunch of flags. They said, you're not allowed. And he's like, okay, we'll just skip the App Store. But where I was going with that is, you know, you came from Greenwall at Alicos, and like back, so my history in Bitcoin, I've been working in Bitcoin for almost 9 years now, which is fucking insane. It's mostly been on the education side. And there's something to be said about having a cross-platform app, because on the education side, it's such a hurdle if I recommend an app and it's not available on your platform.
Yeah.
You know, like Green Wallet, like for the longest time before Blue Wallet existed, before any of these wallets existed, Green Wallet was like the only one that I could just blindly say, download Green Wallet and you got it on your phone.
Yeah. I think, probably was the first like real cross platform. You have mobile, you had desktop.
Now right, the desktop changed came the desktop. Later, but yeah.
Yeah. There was the, I know now they've redone it in Qt. So now they have a new desktop app, but even before there was something. Now there's what, like Blue Wallet maybe? I can't think of that many.
I think Blue Wallet has an OS X app, I think, but they don't have any other, like they don't have Linux or Windows.
Yeah, like there are not that many wallets that are, you can use them everywhere, like from a whole range of devices. So yeah, they were very, I don't know, ahead of their time, I guess, with Green. But there are trade-offs, so I don't know. Like Green, you know, there's the multi-sig thing, so
very just complicated.
So now they have the single sig option, which is cool. At that time, I think I personally didn't want to use Green because I just wanted a simple like single
sig. And they would ask you like during the onboarding, they'd ask for your phone number and your email. It was a different time,
2FA, but... So it's cool, you have extra safety from the 2FA perspective, but sometimes I think for like advanced users, you just want one thing and that maybe cannot provide it for you. But for average users, that's a great option, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point, right? Like one of my theses for someone who does so many podcasts, you think I'd speak better, is that there's just going to be many different types of Bitcoin users, right? So it's not really a one size fits all. And that's why projects like BDK are so important, right? Because if you can enable developers to create, you know, more specialized Bitcoin wallets that are focused on different types of Bitcoiners, then that's a massive win, as long as we have more options and people can kind of choose what they want, right?
I think different people need different trade-offs. So there are people who maybe they want to self-custody their own keys, but then they're like, oh, maybe I'll lose them. So with Miniscript and BDK, you can easily throw in like a recovery key that only activates after a year or something like that. So you have your own key, you can normally, only you can spend normally, but it, you know, worst case, there's that extra recovery key, which I don't know, you can give to a friend or you can give to some company that does recovery services for you. So yeah, I think that's like really big, important piece to get to this future where we have more advanced wallets, basically, not just single sig, not just multi-sig, because otherwise most people end up using custodial services, which I mean, I think it makes sense. Like if you don't trust yourself, if you're not a technical person and you're afraid you're going to lose your keys, it makes sense for you to go to a custodial service. But I think we can do better. We can have still like self custody with recovery backup mechanism, more advanced.
Do you think self custody is still too difficult?
I don't think it's difficult. Like clearly, it's not hard to write down a piece of paper, write down words on a piece of paper. But I think like, I think most people don't trust themselves with the, like you have to keep this thing safe and
it requires personal responsibility.
And I agree with them. I don't think most people are ready for that. Like we live in a world where you forget your email password and you just click a button and they send it back to you. Like you can recover from, I think we kind of live in this world where we have the idea that worst case, I can talk to somebody and I don't know, I lose my credit card, I can call the bank, and I get a new one.
We live in a world with no personal responsibility. Yeah. It's been groomed out of us, essentially. And Bitcoin's radical personal responsibility.
And this probably applies to many other aspects of not only keeping your money safe, also to other like aspects of life in general.
Look at like something like photo storage stuff. Or something even.
Sorry?
Something that's way less photo storage. Way less critical.
Yeah.
Right, but like people don't even trust themselves to like locally. Well,
people back keep up their phones on the cloud,
right? Yes. Because they want the automatic backup. You know, they're willing to trust a large company to do it.
And I think, I definitely think people should learn to take responsibility for themselves, but I also think people are not ready right now. So yeah, I agree that for the average users, maybe self-custody can be a bit too much.
So how do we what's the biggest issue there?
I was going to say self-custody. The other thing too, in my mind, is that self-custody has been pictured, or, you know, just it seems to be like zero or one, black or white.
That's what, right? I think, yeah.
We miss sort of like this big grayscale, but mm-hmm. And you've had the guys talking about Miniscript a few weeks back. This, right. I think this is what we're going for in the next few years. We need to like gray all of that. Like you need to have pieces where like you start a little bit more. And when you think of like, I think custody is at the core of what Bitcoin, like keys and trusting yourself and whatnot. So when I see stuff like the UpVault proposal by James O'Byrne, like,
love James.
This is where I think it's important. Like, it's custody is at the core, and we need to create simplicity. But right now, if you talk to your mother about Bitcoin, right, it's like zero or one. She'll lose it all if she misses. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, she's never going to do that. But if you had this ability for like
collaborative custody kind of situations where like I could hold a backup key for her or something,
yeah,
but I can't just rug her, like she would need to like a time lock
key and some other relative, or even some paid service, you know, like it could be a paid service that holds that key as a backup. I mean, the nice thing about a library like BDK or any library built with Miniscript is you're using the exact same library with just a different script, with just a different Miniscript or descriptor.
Right.
All the other features of the library, you know, how you sync the blockchain, how you store the data, how you create transactions, sign transactions, that, you know, you could have a single sig, or you could have this complicated multi-sig with time locks and, you know, all sorts of other features to it. Mm. And it's the same software, it's the same library. You're not rewriting the library or even using different features. You're still using the same features. And you just have to, you know, obviously there's more software you need to build around it for coordinating signing and all those things, but or talking to your hardware wallet. But the core code is the same.
Yeah, it's like a tool that once you learn it, you can do everything, basically. So if you learn,
Swiss Army knife.
I don't know, Bitcoin.js, you can do like single sig, multi-sigs maybe, and then you want to do something more complicated and you have to learn a new one.
Start over, basically.
Yeah, with BDK and Miniscript in general, you just learn that and then you're basically done for, at least for on-chain development on Bitcoin. Yeah. Like you can do, I think one thing nobody really mentions is that normally we say BDK is a tool that you can use to make wallets. I mean, technically, that's true. Like a wallet is a piece of software that stores your keys and you can receive funds and you can spend them. But I think with BDK, you can also make not only like the wallet app, you can make any kind of service that somehow interacts with on-chain Bitcoin. So any kind of service that needs to receive funds or need to send funds. So like, for example, you built a faucet. Thunder Biscuit. built a faucet for his Padawan wallet, and that's, I mean,
for what wallet?
Padawan wallet, is that the right pronunciation?
Star Wars reference.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, which is the wallet we were talking about before, the simple, like kind of educational wallet, and then you can build a faucet with BDK, because really a faucet is just a piece of software that creates a transaction when a user wants some testnet funds, or you can monitor, if you're, I don't know, in accounting or something, you can with BDK monitor the wallet, like company wallet,
like you a watch have, only version of it,
yeah, like a watch only too, yeah. Basically, so you can build accounting software around this thing where you paste your descriptor and this will pull all of your historical transactions and you can do, I don't know, all the boring accounting stuff on that. So yeah, I think it goes a lot further than just a wallet app, which is, I mean, that is probably going to be the main thing. But
being built on Rust, and this gets back to Rust, because we like Rust. It's, you know,
we like the Rust.
You can compile it for mobile. You know, you can make these binaries for mobile. You can make them for desktop. You can make them for high-powered multiprocessor servers, or you can run them in the web. In the web browser, that's what the Mutiny guys are doing. They're basically running the whole shebang in the browser, compiling Rust into this WASM format.
Right.
Or you could run it in, if you're really into like Node.js. Daniela here did a little some work this week.
Yeah. It was just like a really little example. Like, I think I did it in like a couple of hours, something like that. Just how to use BDK in Node.js. So it basically compiles to WASM. And then I use some tools to basically make it understandable to Node.js. So then you write some Node.js code and you're just, I don't know, getting the balance of a certain wallet or creating a descriptor, etc. But yeah, again, just yeah. a really small example.
It's a proof of concept. It's the yes. same code yes. running in this Node.js framework is just really popular. A lot of projects, a lot of enterprise software is built that with that technology. Just like proving that concept that it's anywhere. You know, it's Sun microsystems used to have this motto: write once, run anywhere. It's kind of that idea. You have to recompile it, of course, but it is sort of the same well tested stuff running everywhere, which is pretty cool. Actually, I wanted to hear more about the Padawan stuff. The other thing that that Thunderbiscuit's working on is an example Android wallet. Do you want to talk about that and why you built that?
Yeah, totally. So this was I started building this almost 2 years ago, and BDK was sort of at the core of it. And I think right now it's one of the cool BDK apps, like in production. You can download it in the App Store, and it's a cool proof of concept with also the faucet. But the core idea of Padawan Wallet is that it's a testnet only wallet. And within the first minute you open it, it'll send you testnet coins. You get 75,000 testnet satoshis, and then you get to play around with your friends. You can learn about Bitcoin. You can do it all. And then there's a series of tutorials. So it's 9 tutorials about what are keys, what's the mempool, what does it mean to put a fee, and what does it mean to be, before you get mined in a block. And anyway, these kinds of things. And I think that's the idea.
Training too. It's automated sort of self-custodial training. Like it's hitting that comfort with testnet coins. So it's go ahead and lose them if you want.
Can you use it with mainnet or only testnet?
Only testnet. So it's sort of like the protection. I mean, you could recompile it for mainnet. It would actually work. But I don't offer it. So you can't download it on the Play Store with mainnet.
Because it's tied into this idea that as soon as you start up your tutorial, it gives you some Bitcoin to play
with. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. The idea for me was either, I don't know why I thought about this, but either older people who they don't really care about Bitcoin, they don't trust it, they don't want to buy any, or people who are younger. So if you're 14, you're interested in Bitcoin, but your dad is not and your mom is not, how are you going to get coins? It's almost impossible to buy coins, even to try it. Whereas with testnet,
if you can't sign up to an exchange or something like that.
There's no sign. Exactly. You just, if you have a mobile device on Android, you can download it and it'll work for you. You can send it with your friends. Even if you have a little community at school of a few people who have Padawan wallets, then maybe your testnet coins are worth something all of a sudden, right? You can have, it's like in prison how cigarettes are worth something. Maybe if you have testnet coins and nobody else knows how to get testnet coins. But the tutorials also teach you how to go to
the original shit coins.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I just love the fact that there's just a button to receive the coins in the app. Because for example, right now, if you just Google Bitcoin testnet faucet, there's a lot of shit just BNB testnet faucet. And you're just,
it's kind of hard to get.
Yeah, exactly. I just love that.
I had a problem initially because I didn't have a faucet sending you coins, and then I had to somehow teach you about enough Bitcoin technicals for you to then say, go to this faucet online and send yourself testnet coins, copy and paste. It was just people were what? Friction. I don't understand. Yeah, I didn't understand. And so I was no, let me send you coins just right away. And then you can learn later on.
You didn't have enough testnet coins though, right?
Oh, yeah, dude.
All of those had scores.
Yeah.
Somebody hooked you up to some extra testnet coin.
Yeah.
How did that?
People say testnet coins are worthless, but I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
If you're looking for testnet coins, it's not always easy.
Yeah, because everybody loses them and throws them away. And when you get them from the faucet, very rarely you actually send them back. So over time, they're getting more and more scarce. And you can't even buy them. So yeah. They're
things you don't have to work for have less value. So you're losing them.
Yeah. You don't care about them.
And I think the other interesting thing about these sort of sample applications, even though it's testnet, if somebody, another Android developer wants to make an Android wallet, it's all open source. It's all completely open. It's the most permissive licenses we can do. And they just can fork it and rebrand it and put it on mainnet potentially. Yeah. If they want to, take out the faucet part, and they're ready to go. I think we probably have people out there doing that already. We haven't heard of them yet, but that's just Most developers, that's what they want to do. Copy paste.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, we also have like the DevKit wallet, which is exactly that, just like an example, and you can fork it and modify it, and that's just so cool.
I think I'm on my third student right now in my DM who's doing, you know, like fourth year computer science student, they need to do some sort of project, and then they fork the DevKit wallet and just like propose that. And so they've done all sorts of crazy UI on this.
So how do we download the Padawan wallet?
Right on the Play Store.
Oh, it is on the Play
Store. It's right on the Play Store.
And then how do you download the DevKit wallet? These are two different wallets, right?
Yes, and that's not downloadable. I mean, you
have to compile it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Run it yourself kind of thing.
So if I just search Padawan on the
Play Store, you'll download it.
And we for the Android users out there, we also have a very simple test very test iOS wallet in Swift.
That's right.
That Future Paul made as just like a
here too.
A weekend project. Yeah, I don't think he's super proud of it because it was his very first Swift Android iOS app. But we use it whenever we make a new release. I make sure it compiles with his app because it's like the only, you know, easy one to get at, and it's open source. So that's like, again, it's, even though it may not be perfect, I would love to see any iOS developers out there, you know, go check out the BDK Swift GitHub repo and, you know, help improve Future Paul's code and make it a good example for everybody.
That's not on the App Store, right?
It's not on the App Store, no.
So, yeah, maybe somebody should polish it up and publish it like we've done it by the one. So.
Yeah, just like a testnet version of it.
Yeah.
What about Thunder Biscuit? What about, I know you told me I could call you TB, but I'm just going to say Thunder Biscuit as often as I can. Do you find any issues with the irregularity of testnet? Like, it's not...
It's
very similar to Bitcoin, but still like blocks get mined at a different rate. And...
Yeah, totally. It has been certainly something I've struggled with because the app, well, at least for Padawan, it's just to learn.
Right.
It's not too bad. But one of the issues it creates, for example, is that because I'm trying to reproduce the experience you'd get on a mainnet wallet.
Right.
I want your grandma to just spend a weekend on this, delete it on the Monday morning, and then download a real mainnet wallet, and then she would know. So she'll have... already use the idea of like picking your fee rate or whatever. And one of the issues, for example, with testnet is that it tends to be always one Satoshi.
Oh yeah, you don't get the fee.
I don't have
there's no fee market. Kind
of there's no fee market. So
I need Casey to put inscriptions.
That's right.
He had it on testnet originally. I guess anyone's putting their NFTs.
Never made a problem. Yeah.
I mean, I guess fake it. Just tell the user.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of transactions. Yeah, exactly.
If you want to talk about a hard thing for people to conceptualize, if you're in the education part of Bitcoin during a sustained high fee market, it is fucking mess.
Yeah.
It is like no one. It's hard to. It's just something that's foreign to us. That the way, because like you can even do like a next block fee, and then it could just run away from you.
Yeah.
Or like block variance could happen and it could be 45 minutes. It's just like it takes a while for people to actually comprehend
true.
It.
I don't know if you have RBF in your wallet, but that might be an interesting.
I do. Feature. Yeah.
You do? Okay. So, of course, BDK supports RBF. And that's the kind of thing you need people to understand. It's like, well, if you really need it sooner, you can bump your fee up.
Right.
Have this feature just, you know, select the transaction you want to bump and what fee is you need to bump it to. I guess it'll tell you the minimum fee you need to bump it to.
That's the kind of thing you want to practice on testnet too.
Yeah.
I mean, what does it mean to bump a transaction? Well, try it on testnet first. Like, what does it mean to recover a wallet? Try it on testnet first. Always try it on testnet first. That's what I like about Sparrow. I mean, Sparrow's just...
Sparrow's amazing.
Turn it on testnet.
Thank God for Craig Raw.
This is really good. But it's an example of like what creates problems for education on Padawan, for example, is... If I either fake to the user that, you know, I give them like a quick, normal, long fee kind of thing, like estimated block.
Right.
But then it's either fake, which just doesn't necessarily make sense because I also want to link. I want the experience to be real. And so that you
the full package. Like you go to the mempool.
I want you to click on the transaction. It leads you to mempool.space and you can see your transaction on testnet because that's what I do also on mainnet, right? If you have your umbrella, you might click and just go see your transaction on a block explorer. So I want the users to learn that workflow as well. If you need to look something, you can go on the mempool explorer. So if I give you a wrong fee rate and then you go on the mempool explorer, but there's no block,
everybody's more empty, confusing. Yeah.
Then you're double confused.
Maybe in all our free time, we should create a BDK signet and just have it like randomly make traffic and like you know, give all this variables.
Yeah.
Because that's
yeah.
kind of the only way to do it.
So Cygnet, when you spin up a Cygnet, like Testnet has miners. Cygnet just essentially is like, has like.
It still has miners, but you can control who mines the blocks.
Yeah, so you assign the blocks.
You assign the blocks. Yeah. I mean, they get like a special signature or something that allows them to.
But they're not actually providing compute, no, right?
They,
it's just like permission.
They, as far as I understand, you know, that I think they actually do the total mining, but because you can control who the miners are, the difficulty never goes up.
So you can do it on a regular CPU or something.
Yeah, you can use a regular CPU if you just don't overmine it yourself, as long as it's only two people or three.
Is that where we're moving, that most people are going to use Cygnet instead of Testnet?
Some projects going that way. It is a bit of work, though, because you have to have it online all the time.
Testnet's just weird. I just have a weird love-hate relationship with Testnet.
And the nice thing about Testnet is it's got, you know, years of history. That,
but then it gets wiped every once in a while, right?
Exactly.
It
starts. I don't know if it's been wiped lately.
I think it's been a while. Yeah,
yeah,
since the last time.
I just don't get why we don't just wipe it and start again. I mean, they're difficult to find it as net coins, so let's just start again.
There's hoarders. The problem is
the way you would wipe it is you would say, okay, everybody use a new Genesis block, right?
Yeah, because otherwise you can reapply all the blocks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you need a different Genesis so that the second block is not valid. Otherwise you can reuse the chain, pretty much.
To do that, you've got to get everyone to agree, okay, now we've got testnet 3.
Testnet 4.
Or testnet 4.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, currently it's 3, so that would be testnet 4.
So it's motionless.
Yeah. Let's make it happen. The first BDK the BDK team should launch a new testnet.
Yeah, that sounds like just so we can get testnet coins easier.
Yeah, exactly.
we'll be the pre-miners.
For the new testnet. That's it. Let's do a pre-mine.
Pre-mine on testnet 4.
But I wonder, like, I mean, I think this Padawan wallet, it seems really cool. It's a cool concept. And I see how the faucet aspect is really key to the whole thing, and that's why you really need it to be testnet. But I wondered, like, if there's just too much, like, if you give someone $20 of Bitcoin on a mainnet wallet and you just tell them to mess around with it, you know, go through the different processes and stuff, I guess it's not scalable. The beauty of Padawan is that anyone can download and they just get free coin. But like, when I onboard someone, like, I feel like the bigger issue, and we talk about like personal responsibility and stuff, is like, usually when people onboard people nowadays, and it wasn't used to be like this, is you just like send them to it. You just like off to the wolves with you. You just send them to a custodial KYC exchange, you know, instead of just sending them a little Bitcoin. Like, if I send someone $20 worth of Bitcoin and I tell them, okay, send it back to me, then I send it to you, then delete your wallet, then restore it, what's the worst that can happen? They lose, you know, I lose $10, $15.
I think the problem with that is that, yeah, most people would just lose the money. So like, I've heard.
It's a donation to us all.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can see that way, but I think it's frustrating for I've heard many people say, oh, and like in 2014, I talked about Bitcoin to this guy and I sent him like, yeah, $20. And then a few years later, you realize that
it's like $900.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. And it's back. Like, you're pissed off because you're like, you didn't even take care of the key. You lost the money. So I don't know. I think many people probably had that experience in the past. Like, they would gift Satoshis to people who were onboarding and they lost them all. And at this point, they're like, okay, so if you really care about Bitcoin, just go and get yours. So maybe you'll understand the value of money a little bit more if you go and pay for them.
I gave, first of all, never regretted a single Bitcoin gift, even when they lost it. But I used to, when I used to give Bitcoin, I would just keep I would just keep a backup of their private keys.
Yeah.
And I gave it to like 10 of my family members in like 2013, 2014, maybe 2015 even, because the price went down in 2015. So it was lower then. But anyway, my sister lost it. My cousin lost it. And so what I did was I had them all in the same file. So I just like, they both reached out to me and they were like, can you restore it? And I just sweep them all at once. And my uncle reached out to me and he was like, I think I lost my Bitcoin. I don't know what happened. I was like, oh, that was me. My bad.
I sent it. Who took care of it. But that uncle was like.
But I rug pulled him. I was so proud of him for noticing. Yeah. He realized like 2 days after I did it.
You learned a lesson. Like, make sure no one has a copy of the key.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, make sure you will
get good for him. Copy.
That's a good point. Actually, I was thinking of other like interesting educational apps. And I don't know if you wanted to talk, Danielle, about the stuff you did in Bangkok.
Oh, yeah, but Elephant. Yeah.
Raj. Raj is another one of the developers on the team.
Also, yeah. Evan.
And Evan.
Evan, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Forget Evan.
Yeah. So basically, we had to do this workshop that we're going to actually redo here in Nashville on
Saturday.
Okay.
So plug Saturday, Nashville.
So yeah, the point.
Drive in for it.
The point was, we had a very non-technical crowd and we had to explain to them what's BDK. And we were like, uh-oh, that's not easy, right? So we were just like, okay, let's build this wallet. And we have this interface where you can just define your wallet with blocks that look like the
scratch
ones. Exactly. So, yeah, exactly. So you just define your policy, which might be just like Daniela and Steve. And then you have a whole wallet that you can use to just spend those coins. And
multi-sig wallet.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So you just you have your sign page and you have a PSBT and you just sign it.
It's all web-based.
So yes.
You need to install anything.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then you try to broadcast it and you're like, oh, it doesn't work. Oh, right, because Steve has to sign it. So you just give the PSBT to Steve and Steve signs it. And yeah, we did a whole workshop on that, just like telling people about multi-sig and then eventually about time locks. And that was just super fun. So
it's all graphic, and these guys like basically threw it together in a week.
A day.
Yeah,
14
yeah.
hours. Like
hanging out together in Bangkok, and they're like, okay, it's all gonna be in the browser. It's gonna be, you know, point and click sort of.
Yeah, we kind of ignored the problem of at the end of the week we had to do this workshop, and we spent the whole week just ignoring the
hanging out.
We had to do it, and then we got there like the day before, and we were like, oh, what are you gonna do? So we decided to develop this thing, and yeah. It was basically like kind of a hackathon thing. It definitely was like we finished at like 3 a.m. So it was not comfortable one day of development. But
a long one day.
It was, like normally it would be 2 days. So it was pretty quick to put everything together. And I don't know if you've mentioned it already, but this thing is called Elephant because we were in Thailand and we didn't know how to name this thing. And we were like, oh, there are elephants here. and now this thing is hosted at elephant.bitcoindevkit.org. So it's open for everybody to try.
Yeah,
it's also testnet only. You have like this visual editor. You can create complex policies with other people, and then you play around. You share PSBTs, you sign them, you broadcast them.
It's really not just a BDK demo, but a miniscript demo, right?
Yeah,
I think it's more
exactly.
And it really gets deep into what you can do.
Another thing it has that we think it's pretty cool. It's obviously super, super unsafe. But basically, we were like, I think it's in.
It was in
testnet. Yeah, right, sorry.
In Bangkok. Just because we talked about it a little bit before. So in Bangkok, what we did was we created a local reg test.
Mm.
So basically, we had Raj's laptop with a mempool.space instance and a script that would mine blocks periodically. So in Bangkok, it was based on Rectus. And this kind of ties into the discussion we were having before about, oh, should we use a testnet? And that was fine because nobody else was spamming, basically. Like, if you do it publicly, somebody can come in and spam and create a lot of blocks. But there, we only had one laptop producing them. So it was fine.
Controlled environment.
So basically, we realized that one step, which is super important with multisig, is sharing the keys with your peers. But we were like, I mean, we don't want people to spend like 15 minutes every time just sending each other private public keys. So we're like, okay, let's do this alias base thing where you pick an alias for yourself, and we just take the string, and from that we deterministically generate a private key. So what that means, it's on the website, you don't see keys, you just see aliases. And obviously that's super unsafe, because if I know your alias, I can generate your private key. I think that really worked. So now when you basically build the policy of your wallet, you don't have an xpub blah blah. You just have
to share your pub key.
You just say your name.
Yeah, so cool. So yeah,
I think that's a brilliant thing. I did a workshop at TabComp last year, and I was just trying to get to use BDK as a CLI, and we're trying to use the CLI to do something similar. And we just had so many problems with people typing things in the wrong order also. There's a sort of an order dependency there, and just mistyping stuff or copying, because they were sharing it over Discord, but you know, they might have like lost which one they were supposed to copy at. So so much better way to do it.
Yeah, I did a workshop in the Azores at the unconference with BDK, and we were doing like a multi-sig. I think we were 15 people, and I played it safe, so it was like an 8 out of 15, because I was like, you never know, right? And then I gave a backup key which could be used to recover the funds after like some time lock. So it was like
time lock on an 8 of 15.
Yeah, exactly. So worst case scenario, someone's going to recover them with the backup key. Many people lost their private key, and I was just like, no.
This wasn't mainnet, was it?
No, it was testnet. Okay. But yeah, thankfully, we still had at least 8 people with the key. So. Yeah, but it was pretty fun because people were just like, so I lost it. And I was like,
for this new scheme, you kind of learned your lesson in it. Yeah, outdoors.
Exactly.
It's really cool working with people in person, right? Like these workshops and stuff. You learn so much more about, and the questions always catch you off guard too.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because you can think about something for hours and hours, and then somebody comes up and they ask a question that you haven't. They ask something that you hadn't thought of in 5 minutes of them seeing this project. They can come up with something that you couldn't come up with in hours.
Saying in software development that no software has ever survived the users.
I
think right now the Bitcoin UX, it's not exactly great. And I mean, yes, we're devs. We love just chatting between each other on Discord and just coding all day. But actually, the way we're going to improve the Bitcoin UX is just going out there, chatting with people and just hearing what they don't understand and making it easier for them. So.
And our users aren't just end users using the mobile app. Our users are the API, you know, people actually writing and creating wallets. So like every time every time someone comes on our Discord and says, oh, hey, I'm building something, we're like, all right, tell us what you like. You know, this is the feedback we need. We need users telling, you know, even if you're just like a weekend warrior, go build something, you know, tell us what you like about the API, what makes sense. You know, where did we misspell something in our docs even? It's just, you know, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Sometimes people's just like, I don't understand this thing. And we're like, oh, but there's these docs. And they're like, yeah, no, that doesn't really work. And we're like, oh, okay. We're going to improve it. Yeah.
Yeah. And seeing what people want to do with it too. That's always interesting because not everybody wants to build wallets. Some people, you know, a little bit of a segue into what's the future of BDK is, you know, some people don't want to make just simple wallets or even just a simple server-based application. They want to do like coin mixing or silent payments or, I don't know, what are some of the other like strange things? The Gun wallet, what was that supposed to be? It was a
DLC. DLC stuff.
DLC, crypto, weird stuff,
So, you know, that was interesting feedback and has motivated some of the future changes going on right now for BDK. Lloyd Fournier, I don't know if I said that name right, and Evan sort of started this project to add some additional functionality. Kind of BDK started with sort of a high-level API, more user-friendly, but didn't give a lot of the lower-level stuff if you wanted to do stranger stuff, you know, some of these stranger applications. So they started working on this initiative to build this, what we're calling BDK Core or BDK 1.0, which sort of be our new final API, adding some more of these low-level features and, you know, fixing some of the like multi-threading stuff that people are needing for some of these applications. That's sort of our big push this year. That's one of the things the team is, you know, going to be focused very heavily on in the coming months.
Yeah, exactly. So on the other side, like if you want to contribute to BDK right now to the main Rust repo, just don't. Because at this point,
if you want to get involved, if you're like a rockstar Rust developer, like definitely get involved. But it's going to be it's not like there's not a lot of low hanging fruit right now. It's like deep.
I mean, yeah, right? Exactly. But you have to work on the new BDK core stuff because
you have to be ready.
If you want to just add a new feature to the current BDK, what's that, 0.27? 0.26?
We're getting ready to release 0.27.
Okay.
So it'll probably be where it kind of sits for a while, and it'll be primarily bug fixes.
Exactly. Yeah. Just don't try to add features there, because the whole team is working on something else, and we don't even have like...
And is that repo not public right now?
No, it's all public.
Yes.
So Lloyd has a staging repo.
Okay.
That they've been doing all their experimentation, kind of getting the basic framework set up. And we're in the stage right now of testing that and getting it prepared to move into the main repo, the master branch, you know, call it. And once we've committed that code into the master branch, it's sort of the point of no return. Like we're committing that's going to be our, you know, all of our new work is going to be happening there on that new framework.
Yeah, so essentially for final users, the API is probably not going to change all that much. So if you were using BDK or if you're using BDK right now, once that PDK 1.0 things are finished, it's basically going to be the same for you. The only difference is that if you want more access to the low level, more powerful APIs, you're going to have that. So you're not going to be forced to change your code necessarily, but you're going to have access to
a lot more API space to play with potentially.
A lot more, yeah.
And we were talking about education before too, but BDK is also in the game of education for developers,
right?
I think in a way, right? And that gets passed down. So you have like, you know, Peter Wille, Polstra, Sankit, they build Rust Mini Script.
Okay. Right.
So that gets like passed on to...
And
Rust Bitcoin. And then Rust Bitcoin, right? And then that's eventually you got like developers who write BDK, which is sort of like a simpler exposing simple and ways adding, to use it.
Wallet function.
Yeah, adding all of that. And now we're passing that down. Like people come on the Discord server and, you know, they want to build something special, but what they write is UI but they've heard about all these great things. And so they want to build a wallet, but they're used to libraries that are more like, give me 12 words, here's your wallet. But that's BDK uses latest tech. Like, and so you're going to need output descriptors.
It's education all the way down.
All the way down. And being all the way down.
Be close to the mic, Steve.
Right. Yeah, being a wallet project, being more accessible, I think we also attract more developers that want to get involved. Like, you know, people that just want to work on a Bitcoin project and, you know, wallet's a nice entry point. We have a new developer this year named Vlad, who's one of our first African developers.
That's awesome.
He's got a grant from Kuala. And yeah, he's like taken over. We have a
Kuala with a Q, right?
Kuala with a Q, yeah. So he's like, you know, split this. One of the projects we had this year was to split off some of the code from the main BDK into a supporting library. So he's like, you know, what can I work on? What can I do? It's like, okay, you know, take this Rust Explorer thing and he's like maintaining it, helping, you know, patch it and support it. So that's where it's like developer education comes in too for a project like this.
The African vibes are really high on the African continent developers. Like I feel like I find so many that are
motivated.
They're super motivated and they're very excited about it. They come in fast and hard.
Yep. Same with India. Like we do Summer of Bitcoin. We did Summer of Bitcoin last year and we'll probably, you know, potentially have some Summer of Bitcoin people this year. They, you know, they want to learn. They're like, and you know, we've got like Thunderbiscuit actually had like what, 5 mentees last year. He was like way overachieving there.
Not all under me, but yeah.
But like in the project that was kind of,
that's exciting.
This was like,
well, Summer Bitcoin was super oversubscribed, right? Like, what was it, like 95% oversubscribed? Yes. And it's like insane amount of applications.
I think 20,000 applicants.
That's crazy. Yeah. And like, boy, how many were chosen? Like 200 or something, right?
Yeah. I mean, the limiting factor
60
is
60 by the end of it.
Mentors, because every mentee gets a mentor, and it's quite a bit of time if you want to be a mentor to do this.
And that includes designers as well.
Yes.
So we had like for me it was for Padawan Wallet. We had 3 designers who were mentees of Stephen Delorme, which you probably know.
Huge friend of mine. Yeah.
That's right. And Christoph Ono. So these two guys were basically mentors on the designer side, and then I had an engineer which I was mentor of. So like the whole Padawan Wallet was
project coordinated.
Yeah,
everybody's basically working on this Padawan thing at the same time. And if you see, when you download it and you take a look at it, it's polished. Like it's actually really paid off the design side.
Yeah I was gonna say about the Summer of Bitcoin, I think that's kind of an hit or miss in a way, because the problem is, I mean, probably it's a good thing. They pay a salary to the developers subscribing. But the problem is that this attracts a lot of people who don't care about Bitcoin at all. They're just there to take the money. So, for example, we had some good experiences with some developers that were actually like into what they were doing. Some bad experiences with people that were just there just to get the money. So they wouldn't care about the project. They would just do the bare minimum. They would be like, oh, yeah, I'm stuck with this. And why didn't you ask for help? Like, I'm here to help.
Yeah, it's the same problem with bounties sometimes.
Yeah,
you put a bounty up, sometimes you get people that just want the bounty and aren't really there to learn.
Yeah.
So it's a bit more work on the development team sometimes.
And they become more of a burden than the help.
Because you've got to now... We recently had a bounty, and you know, thank you very much for Hugh for setting up this bounty on Geyser Fund. And we got some great contributors that are going to get the bounty, including... I think it was Ben Carmen. Did he? Was he one of the, or was it a Future Ball?
I think
it was maybe Future. Okay. Anyway, like some other developers that were first contributors on BDK are going to get the bounty. But we also got people just like making two character grammar changes.
And they were like fixing typos.
Yeah, exactly.
Fixing a typo when they wanted the $50 bounty.
Yeah, they wanted to try to do that. And that's a bit of noise on the project. So it's, you know, I think we're still experimenting too with how to onboard people and how to find contributors. And, mainly they're finding us, which is great.
I think in general, it's important to be open to other developers. Like when you see somebody who's motivated and they want to start contributing, you help them out. The problem is sometimes, you get those people who they just don't want to put in any effort. Like, I don't know if you remember on Discord, the people were like, oh, I'm stuck with this error. How can I fix it? And it was like a very clear error. Yeah, it was like, I don't know, please install Rust.
Yeah.
Something like that. And they were like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. Like, read the error.
Yeah.
It's not that hard. So sometimes you get those people that, I don't know, I guess.
Sometimes it's like.
Yeah, maybe it's like a college project. They just have to do something and they don't want to put in any effort. So that is kind of sucks.
Yeah, actually talking about new developers. So Evan is one of our new developers and he's a great example of someone who just came in, started. I mean, he had worked on projects before. He had some experience and he just like started looking for bugs and fixing them or looking for issues and writing up issues, you know, just writing them up in a clear way that they could be fixed. And now he's working with Lloyd on this 1.0 stuff. So he like just jumped in feet first. And you know, he'll admit he came from sort of some shit coining development shops, and you know, but we are open to everybody. You know, we don't care if you worked on shitcoins before. If you understand the error of your ways and you want to come work on a real Bitcoin project, and
well, that's how people learn.
Yeah, you have to learn. Everybody comes in at different times and different places. So you know, and you know, now we have a great new contributor to the project. So.
But I mean, that's what I was trying to get at before with testnet. My love hate relationship with testnet is like. At some point, you just got to take the training wheels off and like the kid's going to fall and hit himself, you know, but that's how he learns, right? If you keep the training wheels on the whole time, there seems like a little bit of it's a little bit too prevalent in the space, like to just like paddle the walls and try and make it, you know, too comfortable for people when ultimately they're going to have to. You're going to have to learn a shitcoin.
Yeah, have to have some sats if you want to. Yeah.
But these are for soundproofing. Yeah, Steve, just to be clear, these walls are very padded in here. Yes.
No.
It's like how you guys named Elephant, right? I was looking around. It's like padded walls. But...
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I mean, I think people do have to learn. I know, like, I'll call it my brother here. So he pays his kids in lightning sats for their chores. And, you know, if they lose them or they more likely they don't lose them, but they, you know, they go buy candy when the price is low.
Right.
Then they don't have them when the price goes high. You know, that's how people learn. I mean, they're going to care more about the price if they're real sats.
Right. Or at least the purchasing power, like how much candy they can get with sats.
Yeah, exactly. What kind of toy.
In a post-hyper-Bitcoinization, like the kids are just going to care about how much candy they can buy.
When they get to college and they go back and look at how much sats they spent 10 years before, they might cry a little bit.
I first learned about Bitcoin, like as far as I just used testnet a lot, even with Lightning. So I just played around a lot. And then I was at this internship at a Bitcoin company that's not here anymore.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace. Exactly.
Great.
So this guy was just like, okay, now I'm going to send you some real Bitcoin and you send them back to me. And it was like $50. And I was like an unemployed kid. So I was like sweating. Yes. And I did everything right, but I just double checked everything like 5 fucking times and I felt like okay, now I'm doing the real stuff, because with testnet I was just like, oh yeah, copy paste the address, whatever, and I was there like, oof, this has to go right. so
you're on training wheels.
That's a
feature for Padawan, like you have some sort of selector, like turn training wheels off, and then you're gonna like
all hell breaks loose.
Put in a, an email of a friend or something who's gonna send a send an address to give you real ones too.
That would be a cool feature, just like
graduation button.
There's a term I use called like Uncle Jim,
that's true.
Where, you know, going back to what Alico said, it's like, I just feel like so many people are groomed with the society nowadays just removes all personal responsibility. So when I think about how do we transition to a world that has radical personal responsibility, which is this idea of just like the greater open source movement and Bitcoin together, just, you know, more sovereign individuals. That's a major hurdle. And I think the only way it scales is people helping friends and family and local community, right? It's one of the reasons why we've taken such a huge risk on Bitcoin Park is that I think physical spaces and community development is super important for the movement. So like wallets that are designed, whether that's Padawan, built into Padawan or something different, like wallets that are designed where there is some kind of link with a friend's wallet or a family member's wallet where they can kind of see what you're doing. Like it's built from the ground up as a, you know, like a guidance wallet where I have some kind of super user power mixed into there, right? Where you like build it out in that purpose.
When I was a kid, my grandfather was flying airplanes, like mini airplanes a lot. And this was all gas back then. Now they're all electric, but
like so remote control.
Yeah, remote controlled ones. Yeah. And he was the president of the club and whatnot. And so, the first time I flew with him, like the first few months, we were side by side and he had a controller and they were connected by a wire. And he could at any time just flip the switch and take
just override it. Yeah.
I still crashed it. Yeah. I still crashed it. I still actually crashed it one day. He wasn't able to take control quick enough and crash the plane.
Hey, it'd be cool if you had a Bitcoin wallet like that.
Yeah, sort of a co-pilot. But I like these ideas of like just time locks.
Yeah.
Where keys that become available to someone else.
Wide.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Give me.
I mean, we've got Miniscript. We have the power.
You can totally do that. Yeah. These are your keys. This is your wallet. But 5 years down the road, if this hasn't moved, you lost it, some third party gets custody.
Right. I can recover it then.
Yeah. Something like that.
Speaking of communities, I'm going to self-promote our
do
what we're doing. So Daniele and I, we live in Italy. We live in a small town, kind of near Milan, called Brescia. Probably nobody has ever heard of it, but and I mean, we are bored when we're there. We just don't know what to do. So we decided to open kind of a Bitcoin hackerspace thing.
Awesome.
It's going to be super small. Like compared to this, it's nothing compared to Bitcoin Park. But yeah, I mean, you got to start small, I guess.
Good goals to have, though.
So is it open yet?
No, we are. So right before leaving, we signed the rent.
Oh, congratulations.
Contract. Yeah, so we found a spot in the city center. So cool, you know, like Italian.
How far is it out of Milan?
Oh, it's 1 hour by car.
Oh, that's awesome.
With trains, it's like 35 minutes.
I love Milan. Trains, Milan's a great city.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we used to live there. It's good. It's also bad there.
Well, I'm a former New Yorker, so Milan feels like Italy meets New York.
Yeah. It's like a high, right?
It was very familiar to me. It wasn't like a tourist city. It was like I was there and people were going to work and things.
Yeah, it's a big financial center of Italy, I guess. So yeah, we're doing this thing. Hopefully in a couple of months it's going to be ready and fully open. So if you come by Italy and Europe.
How do we find more information about it? Do you have a site or anything?
So yet? Yeah, we have a website. The website is hack.bs.it. The place is called hack.bs because BS is like the shortened version of Brescia, of our city.
Cool.
And actually hack.bs, maybe I shouldn't say this because some listener will come in and steal the domain for us, but hack.bs is a valid DNS like domain. It's a Bahamas domain, but it costs like $500, so we can't afford it right now. So
someone buy the domain for them, or
and give it to us, please. Yeah. so we have the hack.bs.it domain, which was much cheaper. We have a Twitter profile, which is hackbs with the 4 in place of the.
Is that ACK?
HACK, like hack, meaning like hacker.
Oh, yeah, hacker.
Because it's an hacker space.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be, we want it to be a Bitcoin like physical place. Probably going to be more of a cypherpunk. So we're
That's
trying
awesome.
To open it a little bit more. Because
Shitcoins.
Yeah, not to shitcoins, obviously. So it's
but like the greater only. Open source.
But yeah, a greater open source kind of environment, because in that small town, there are not that many Bitcoiners. So if you just open a Bitcoin space, I think nobody's going to come. Instead, if we open a space which is more of a, basically where we teach about privacy, about freedom, about technology.
Kind of like HCPP.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the big... Yeah, that's one of the big inspiration.
3D printing.
And we're going to have like a lot of non-software stuff. So I want to have like 3D printers, CNC machines. So
that's awesome.
But also like art and things like art, that. I don't know.
That would be great. Like we none of us, there's only one designer and we don't have
two
any artists.
Them,
two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... We're
not artists. We have art all over because I just
yeah
you so, you empower the local artists.
Yeah,
just tell them We have walls.
Yeah, know? Yeah, that's what we want to do. Like, Parallely Policy is full of awesome art because I think at some point they managed to onboard artists. So I hope we're going to be able to do that as well, to onboard people that have more of an artistic side than us, and they'll, I don't know, make paintings for us to.
Well, there have your first thing to go up on the wall, which is from here in Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
The Spiral guys took us out on a little team building exercise. We went shooting automatic weapons and handguns.
Love it.
And a sniper rifle.
In an old movie theater.
So anybody in Nashville here, I recommend going checking it out. But they let us keep the target from the sniper rifle stuff. So we've got
that's going to be the first
art for that.
Yeah.
Hack BS.
Yeah, because in Italy, guns are like, I don't know. Like,
really,
not even
illegal.
Yeah, maybe for like American people listening to this, they think, oh, like California, nobody can get a gun. In Italy, it's like worse than that.
Yeah,
nobody
yeah.
really.
California is very easy to get a gun in comparison to Italy. Yeah.
In general, probably it's like nobody has ever seen a gun. Basically, like you don't know they even exist. Yeah, unless you're in the military.
Well, I'm glad you got to experience our local pastime.
Yeah, I know that's great. Super fun.
You can train us in building Bitcoin wallets, and we'll train you how to use guns.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a super useful skill. Like, actually, I mean, it's fun, but it was also interesting for me because I'm like, maybe in the future I'll need to shoot a gun. So it's a useful skill to have, to know, to defend yourself. And like, going back to the
hackerspace
conversation about, talking about people not taking personal responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
You know, another big thing. Like, yeah. People don't have guns because they don't take responsibility for their own life, basically.
And you're saying too, it's a whole other technical rabbit hole to fall down too. Like, you know, how the guns work, how to maintain them. We didn't do that this week, but you know, it's another for tech people. It's always fun to know about those other things too.
But to the hackerspace, I mean, that is awesome. And I love seeing all the different spaces, physical spaces opening up. And one of the cool things with Bitcoin Park is like a lot of people come here and then go back home, and then they launch something back home. Like, everyone's just like, how do I do this in my city? Well, at the scale of Bitcoin Park, you do it by losing a ton of money.
Yeah.
So I don't suggest that, but start small. Physical spaces are really important. And I'm happy if you guys need any feedback or anything like that. Like, we're happy to help. And
we're already talking about, you know, like, you know, like I said, he was kind of helping us look at the coffee machine yesterday, but technological trading back and forth too. Like, Alikos has a bunch of great ideas, and Danielle, like, great ideas for like hackerspace stuff that, hey, you know, maybe that's kind of stuff we want to do here at Bitcoin Park. And,
yes.
You know, some of the ways we've got Bitcoins, you know, some of the things we've set up here, you know, like the art and all those things, it might be taken back home.
So, yeah, I feel like here there's not so much of the practical side, like of building things. This is like a great office, but you don't have 3D printers and stuff like that, which is something we really want to have. Like, we want to have tools and you can. Stuff, you
know, I would love to have 3D printers here too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's like, you know, there's going to be a lot of cross-pollination between all these
100%
oriented community.
And it's very grassroots. It's very like Bitcoin, you know, it's very, it's inherently distributed. It's not like one
anybody
group
do
is doing it.
Yeah. You go back where you live and then you open one. I think for us, the main inspiration was Parallelnipolis because it's super cool. And again, also like,
well, the same with us here was Parallelnipolis.
Yeah.
We just made it easier to pronounce.
Bitcoin Park's way easier.
Exactly. Yeah, the other place is great. So again, we're going to be like nothing compared to them, but that's, I guess, how you start.
Yeah, you got to start
somewhere. Goes up, at some point, we'll be rich enough to get a proper place.
Like, I'm already so hyped because we've done like a Notion page with all the events we want to do and all the projects we want to work on. And there's just so
that's
much
awesome
stuff. We're just like, we're going to have game night and Bitcoin night and film night and movie night where we show like The Matrix and other films that might help people to just understand the cypherpunk point of view. And then we have so many projects we want to work on, like, I don't know, fridge, which like you can pay with Lightning and then you open it and you take whatever you wanted to
that's
buy
awesome.
And stuff
like
that.
A self-service
exactly
yeah, because again, I think the problem for us is going to be there are not that many Bitcoins, so we have to be open to tech people in general, to people who builders and
but it also will click to
and
them
we try to
it'll click to them if they make their first Bitcoin payment. That's what people like.
Yeah.
Actually just using Bitcoin, even if it's the shittiest wallet.
Yeah, buying a beer at your little bar with Lightning or with Bitcoin.
There's so many people that come here, it's the first time ever using Bitcoin. And maybe they've been in the space for like 4 years, 3 years, and they just never actually used it to buy something.
We have this thing called a Blescomat, which is an ATM, like a really small one,
right,
which accepts coin. So basically, people just, I don't know, they take out their coins from pockets and they just buy €1.
Spare change, you put it in and you get them, you get sats on Lightning. And then you can buy.
Show them how to like set up a wallet.
Yeah.
You know, a great workshop's a thing. And
yeah.
You guys did mention it before, but they do, if anybody wants to support what's going on there in Brescia, it's they've got a BTC Pay server.
Yep.
Where you can.
And how do we get there?
Donation page.
On the
hack.bs.
Yeah, on the website. And there should be like a donate.
On the front page, I think. A link to it.
Yeah, in the menu, I think, above.
Check out
menu.
Great website.
Oh, we're also on Geyser. How is it called? Geyser.
Geyser, that's fun. Yeah, but we don't have our own license.
Oh, yeah, they take a fee.
Yeah, we do have only Lightning
address.
And sorry?
So what are you using, like a Lightning address with them? Or?
I don't know. They set up something for us, but they take a fee because we don't have LND nodes and they just...
BTC Pay server's best approach.
Yeah, that's like self-hosted.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm looking at it. It looks great.
Yeah.
€10,000 soft cap goal.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a random goal. We don't really have... we're going to open the place anyway. So it's not like we need to reach a goal to open it. We're going to open it anyway and we're going to start super small. We're looking... Right now, we're looking for used furniture, like we're looking for desks that we can get it for $20 or something like that.
See that? If you're going to buy chairs, I'm going to buy used chairs.
Absolutely. Yeah, so the idea is we don't have a specific goal in mind, but whatever we can get, obviously, it's going to go towards better furniture, better hardware, 3D printer, software.
Honorary membership. You will be granted the status of honorary member of our association and you will receive a t-shirt. Duh.
Yeah, I mean,
please provide a valid email.
Yeah, because we have like the... Yeah. Because we have like the... How do you say? Like the tiers. You can donate, I think, like €50 for the t-shirt. And then you can donate...
for the seekers.
10 for the seekers, 50 for the t-shirt, and 500 for the honorary membership. Or like, obviously, if you're an honorary member, you'll get a t-shirt.
You get the stickers too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and the stickers too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we still have to figure out, you know, the design. But the designer, the two designers in the group, they're coming up with really cool ideas.
One thing I would say as someone who co-founded OpenSats, where I'm raising donations for other people, not even myself, like it's 100% pass-through. We take no cut whatsoever, our 9-person board. And then like Sill Dispatch, which is completely audience-funded, donation-based, and then Bitcoin Park, which accepts donations. It's hard to get people to donate to things. What we did at Bitcoin Park, which is really interesting, is this idea of annual memberships.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have that as well. We're gonna have some kind of membership.
It's a cool concept. People like being members.
Yeah, no. So the donation is gonna be kind of on top for, especially.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah, it's important right now because now we need to buy stuff to open the place. So it's kind of important right now. Over time, I think we're gonna try to just sustain ourselves. So we are legally a non-profit, so we're not a business, we're not, because
awesome.
That saves a lot of taxes mainly. Also speaking of OpenSats, I think we're gonna sign up there because there are these like bullshit Italian laws that they told us we can't get anonymous donations.
And we can do that for you
to the space. Basically everybody who sends money to the legal association, the legal entity of the association, needs to be somewhat KYC, like need at least kind of a name.
Not the BTC Pay server though?
Technically what I'm doing is I'm personally collecting them and I'm saying
donating.
Yeah, and then I'll forward them.
Well, we're happy basically to do that for you.
But yeah, eventually we want to have, also because we did...
Just go to opensats.org/apply.
Yeah, I'll apply.
The sooner you put the application, because we have to, you know, there's a process to get you approved and put on the site. So just get it up there.
So just a little plug. So BDK is now on OpenSats.
There you go.
Thank you very much, Harper, and the whole OpenSats team. That, you know, for open source projects, we're not lawyers, we're not accountants. You know, to have an organization that's not taking a cut that will help run our nonprofit so people in the US can donate, you know, tax-free. It's a huge...
I think we would be happy to pay for that kind of service, and it's even free. That's even
noted. Maybe we'll start charging.
Well, that's what other things. Like, one of the other ones we looked at, like Open Collective, is a similar system.
Right,
they take 10% donations.
Wow.
So that's like sort of the norm.
Yeah, HRF takes 5%, which is pretty low, I think.
Yeah, that's on the low end for sure.
And that's why I mean, most credit goes to my co-founder Ben, price, because when he approached me, I was like, well, we could just do 2.5% and just be better than everyone else. He's like, no, man, it has to be 100%. I was like, okay, this sounds more difficult, but we'll do it.
Which, by the way, you can also donate directly to the OpenSats operations.
Yeah.
That's an option too.
So. Yeah, we're working on that. But that's like our way around. We like realize we need some kind of operations budget. So we have a separate operations budget that people can donate. So
people that want to support the groups that open source is supporting also support OpenSats because it's a nonprofit.
Is this recursive supporting?
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah. But yeah, it's a great thing. You guys should get on it too.
Yeah, we'll do. That's pretty cool.
Awesome.
So any other projects? Are there any projects we forgot to talk about that I know
there's Rustich HWI I'm working on.
Let's
so
talk about that. That's a great
okay.
One.
So basically there's the Bitcoin Core HWI, which is it means hardware wallet interface, and it's all in Python. So you have this project, you have an hardware wallet, you connect it to your computer. It works on desktop only, Linux, macOS, and I've been told Windows as well, but I haven't tried. Okay, cool.
Just Python. Cross-platform.
You just plug in your hardware wallet and then you have some comments that you can send it to it, like, hey, please sign this transaction. Hey, please give me your XPub. So that's pretty cool, but it's in Python, so we couldn't use it from BDK. So what
or any other Rust program.
Yeah, exactly. What I've been doing recently, it's... I've basically using Pyo3, which is a library in Rust, which is kind of like a bridge between Python and Rust. I've been working on this project called Rust HWI, which is just the porting of HWI to Rust. It's not complete Rust. I'm still calling the Python functions, but at least you do have some Rust interface.
So it's running the Python interpreter within your Rust program and handling all of the paths and environment.
Now, what we've been chatting about recently, mainly in here at Bitcoin Park is, well, everyone loves mobile and HWI doesn't work on mobile. So we're like, okay, maybe someone should start some kind of project, kind of like HWI, but in some programming language that is easy to port to mobile. And I mean, we're like Rust geeks.
Ton of ideas, but don't have the time.
Yeah.
It's a big project. I mean, anybody definitely who wants to make a Rust wallet for desktop, we were talking about desktop wallets, it's ready to go there.
Yes.
You got HWI there. I forgot, is it under Magical Bitcoin or is it under Bitcoin DevKit?
I think it's under Bitcoin DevKit.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's under Bitcoin DevKit's GitHub repo.
Yeah, there's also an example in the BDK repo on how to use it with HWI. So
And you made that example too, right?
Yes, exactly.
So basically, she's held your hand on how to use HWI on Rust, BDK stuff. So
yeah.
You should try that.
And then maybe eventually we'll have BDK HWI or something.
Yeah. I think my idea is like super ambitious. I want to have this library where you have generic transport like systems that you can kind of plug in. So the idea is you implement once the logic to talk to a ledger or to a Trezor or whatever, and then you can swap the communication layer basically, because that needs to be reimplemented.
USB, NFC.
Yeah, but not only USB, because USB itself, if you want to be multi-platform, you have to use like libUSB on desktop, and then you need to use a different thing on Android, and so even like within USB you have sub.
Platform dependent
things for Bluetooth as well, because you have to hook into the system and different OSes do it differently. So that's kind of my idea. I think that would be super cool. I don't know if I'll ever gonna work on that.
So that's a call out. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Project
putting it out.
You want to see HWI on mobile? You want to pick Alakos's brain and he'll get you started. You go do it.
Yeah.
And also, if you're like building an actual hardware wallet, please just build the simulator as well. Because there are so many other wallets out there and they're just simulators for Ledger, Trezor, and Coldcard. And, some people might want to try your other wallet without having to buy it. And, I mean, devs who want
you
to
work
with it.
You have open source developers here trying to support your product.
Exactly.
Give them the tools they need.
Exactly. So, please do that.
Good call out there. Yep. Any other projects that I didn't mention?
If you're a developer and you're listening and you want to contribute to BDK, where do you What should you do?
So we have a Discord. Great, great call. So if you go, first, you can start with our website, bitcoindevkit.org. And then from there, there's a link to our Discord. Depending on your time zone, various of us will be there. We have, you know, team members, like I said, in Africa, Asia, India,
Europe,
North America, Australia. So we've got all the time zones generally covered. But so the Discord is a great place to get us live. And then from there, there's also a link to our GitHub.
Yeah.
So check out the
Bitcoin DevKit
GitHub.
We were chatting about that a couple of days ago. We have many people that maybe they want to contribute to the main BDK library. But right now, one of the big questions we have is, how's our API? Is it good? Can you actually use it? So one great way, even if it doesn't seem so, one great way of contributing to BDK is actually building on top of BDK.
Right. Any part of BDK.
Exactly.
So it could be mobile, it could be desktop, it could be our Python bindings. We haven't had a lot of use for that yet.
I
think feedback would be very helpful because, again, with BDK 1.0, we want to kind of set the API in stone. We don't want to change it anymore. So we want to make sure we do it right, basically.
Yeah, and the idea with the 1.0, like for any software project, is it's going to be something you're going to support longer term. You know, this is like you're saying, this is, you know, this is the feature set more or less and the API to access it. And we're going to provide you a longer term support. And that's a big milestone. We're not quite there yet, but we're going to be there this year, I hope.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming to Bitcoin Park and spending time.
Thanks.
It's been a pleasure. Well, before we wrap up, I like to end dispatch with final thoughts. So, let's go around the table and do final thoughts. Well, we'll end with Steve because he's the elder in the room. Alecos, final thoughts.
Oh, that's too open of a question for me. I don't know. I really hope this kind of thing will motivate people to come and contribute to BDK. I'm not good at this. I don't know what else to say. Let's see.
Acquiesce.it.
Come to Italy. Come visit our place. We have
some great pizza and
donate, support, visit.
We have everything. Sorry, awesome. That's super random. I'm not good at this.
No, you're good. You're good. He's got a huge smile on his face.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alecos.
He's doing well.
Thunder Biscuit, final thoughts. Show him how it's done.
I think BDK is like the window to all the cool stuff you hear about on podcasts.
Yeah.
If you're a dev, you've been hearing for years about Taproot, you've been hearing about Miniscript, you've been hearing about, but you do Python or you do another language or you do, or even if you do Rust, right? This is it. This is your access to all this cool stuff, like the latest, the greatest, the cutting edge. It's there. We have it for you. Come and play with it.
Awesome.
There's a lot of
thanks, Thunder Biscuit. Daniela, final thoughts.
So just please start build on BDK. We've done the difficult stuff. We have all the fucking complicated code, but we do handle it. Okay. So just I don't know, design some UI for a wallet and just do it, please. And share feedback. Don't be shy. Just if you're really, really shy, you can also do it anonymously. Just create a Discord account and just like what Thunder Biscuit did, just with a different name, you know, just don't put your real name and just tell us what you like and what you don't like, because that's super, super useful.
Awesome. Thanks,
you might
Daniel.
Misunderstand, but this is my real name.
Oh.
My mom. When I was born. Yeah, my mom.
Legally born Thunder Biscuit.
Legally born on the docks.
Steve, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Just, I mean, whatever, what all these guys said, but, you know, want to just reiterate that, you know, we, you know, part of this project is trying to be open, you know, trying to be, we have, I didn't mention earlier that we have also weekly calls. So every other week we have a dev call where anybody's welcome to join us. It's on Discord. So you do have to get a Discord account, but you can just listen in, you can be a fly on the wall, or if you want to talk to us live in person, it's a great way to find out sort of the current issues we're dealing with without having to scroll through all the text messages on GitHub. So 1 week we do the core lib in Rust. So it's pretty Rust focused. If you're a Rust developer, that's a good one to show up to. If you're interested in the language bindings, mobile development, Thunder Biscuit runs that meeting on the odd weeks. And we talk about those issues. So that's a great one if that's your platform of choice. There's a lot of developers that are not full-time on the project. We thank all of you. All of the full-time developers have made big commitments in their lives to work on this. They're very passionate about it and just, you know, appreciate everything they do. And just, yeah. And thank you for all our supporters. Like, we have a lot of supporters. Spiral's a big supporter. We have Brink was a supporter recently.
Kala.
Kala is a supporter. You know, thank all your supporters. And we hope
and Babakar of Kala is amazing.
Yeah. So super, super just feel privileged to be able to work on a project like this.
Well, thank you guys. I really do appreciate you guys. Thank you for all the work you guys do for Bitcoin. Thank you for joining us. And huge shout out to the freaks who joined us in the live chat, who support the show, share it with friends and family. We'll be back tomorrow with another dispatch, this time with the Lightning DevKit team. That'll be 3 hours after this one aired, depending on your time zone. So that's, I think, 4 p.m. Eastern. I hate daylight savings. I think that's 2100 UTC, but don't hold me to it. But we'll see you then. And thank you all. Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers.